do the Bible, Hogwarts, disciples, and dementors all have in common? This podcast. Welcome to The Gospel According to Harry Potter, a podcast for Potterheads, Jesus freaks, and everyone in between. My name is Ashley, and together we'll examine the entire Harry Potter series, chapter by chapter, through a biblical lens, looking for insights into Harry Potter from a Christian worldview and insights into real life from a wizarding worldview. So grab your favorite Harry Potter book, your go-to Bible translation, and maybe a mug of warm butterbeer, and get ready to explore the wizarding world like never before. Hey guys, welcome back. I'm Ashley, the muggle behind the mic, and today we're doing a special little bonus episode to wrap up Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Y'all, I can't believe that we already made it through a whole book, although I've been doing my own reread, or should I say re-listen through the audiobooks, and I'm currently on book 7. And as I was wrapping up book 6 listening, and he's saying like chapter 29 or whatever, I'm like, whoa. I'm like, okay, I guess I shouldn't be so proud that we already made it through book 1 because it's pretty short compared to some of the other books in the series. But hey, guys, we did it. So this episode is going to be a little different than what you're used to. I wanted to kind of take a step back and look at the book as a whole. So rather than recapping the story in detail and looking for Lumos points like you're used to, today we're going to focus on three things. And this is actually how I teach literature in Christian school. Is that we can take a secular book and I will zoom in on characters that can be related to biblical characters. I zoom in on themes that can be related to biblical themes. And then I'll zoom in on conflicts, right? Because there's different types of conflicts in stories. And we will look at those through a biblical lens. So I thought, okay, I'm going to be my teacher self today and I'm going to look at this book in that same way. As always, I'll include biblical references in the show notes so you can dig deeper on your own. And if you have any questions about anything we talk about today or just want to chat about it with me, feel free to DM me on Instagram at Gospel According to Harry Potter or email me at gospelaccordingtoharrypotter@gmail.com and I'll be happy to talk to you. So our wand of the week is sycamore. According to wizardingworld.com, Ollivander says, quote, "The sycamore makes a questing wand, eager for new experience and losing brilliance if engaged in mundane activities. It is a quirk of these handsome wands that they may combust if allowed to become bored, and many witches and wizards settling down into middle age are disconcerted to find their trusty wand bursting into flame in their hand as they ask it one more time to fetch their slippers. As may be deduced, the sycamore's ideal owner is curious, vital, and adventurous, and when paired with such an owner, it demonstrates a capacity to learn and adapt that earns it a rightful place among the world's most highly prized wandwoods." End quote. Okay, so this wandwood loses interest in mundane activities. This makes me think of Colossians 3:23, which says, "Work willingly at whatever you do, as though you were working for the Lord rather than for people." Sometimes we can be like the sycamore wand, right? Feeling disengaged from tasks that seem boring and mundane. But when we keep our eyes on Jesus and work at everything like it's just for Him, we can stay inspired to always do our best. So to all my sycamore wand carriers, I challenge you to memorize Colossians 3:23 this week. And if you don't know what your wandwood is, head over to my Instagram highlights and check out the wand ceremony pause game to see which wand chooses you. And now, let's wrap up our journey through Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling. Let's get started by shining some Lumos on a major character from the story. Of course, I love Harry. He really is my favorite character in the whole series. But I wanted an opportunity to explore a different character, so I did a little bracket voting competition on Instagram. And thank you so much to everybody who went on there and voted. It was really fun for me. And it came down to Hermione versus McGonagall. And by a margin of 2 votes, you guys picked Hermione Granger as your favorite character in the book. And honestly, I'm not surprised. Hermione's awesome. I feel like she's very realistic, right? Like we all knew that girl in school. And I kind of have to cringe because I think I was that girl. But let's shine some light on Hermione Granger.
Lumos.
A Tale of Two Goody-Goodies. When I think of the type of student Hermione is, I think of the ultimate goody-goody, like the best of the best and proud of it. And this reminds me a lot of the Apostle Paul. In Philippians 3, verses 4 through 6, Paul describes his pre-Damascus Road self this way. He says, "If someone thinks he has good reasons to put confidence in human credentials, I have more. I was circumcised on the eighth day from the people of Israel and the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews. I lived according to the law as a Pharisee. In my zeal for God, I persecuted the church. According to the righteousness stipulated in the law, I was blameless." So Paul is laying out here the fact that he was the ultimate among his peers, the best of the best. And as the book begins, I think Hermione would describe herself this way too. She's top in every subject, and she's kind of quick to judge other students and point out their mistakes, much like Paul was quick to judge and persecute Christians before converting himself. But in verse 7, Paul changes his tune. He says, "I once thought these things were valuable, but now I consider them worthless because of what Christ has done." In the same way, once Harry and Ron saved Hermione from the troll and she developed a friendship with them, Hermione loosens her grip a little on the value she had once placed on being perfect, even to the point where she's willing to break some school rules to help Harry in his quest to save the Sorcerer's Stone. Another way Hermione gives Paul vibes is that she's muggle-born. Now, Paul was actually as pure-blooded as could be when it came to being, as he put it, a Hebrew of Hebrews. But I'm thinking here about Paul's adoption into the body of Christ. He was a total outsider, which was really his own fault, seeing as how he was hunting Christians down to persecute them. But once he was called by Christ, he not only stepped into the world of the new Christian church, but he took it by storm and became one of its foremost figures. In the same way, Hermione was an outsider to the wizarding world, but once she came on the scene at Hogwarts, boom, she was top of every class. And I also think both Hermione and Paul had to go through some serious humbling from time to time. And it comes with the territory of being so smart and so accomplished. Hermione had to realize that being smart wasn't everything, and that there was value in the different strengths of her friends, too. And Paul, too, had to realize he didn't have it all right just because he was such a successful Pharisee. He needed Jesus desperately. And once he realized that, he was unstoppable, even from prison. I'm so glad to have both Hermione and Paul as characters we can look to for the inspiration we need to work hard, to learn from our mistakes and help others become their best selves. They may be a couple of goody-goodies, but their stories demonstrate growth, strength, and gumption we can all learn from. Knox. Next, let's check out a major theme from the book. And guys, there are tons of themes that we could look at in this book. And some of the obvious ones are like the power of love and the value of friendship and, of course, good versus evil. But one minor kind of theme that also emerges in the story that I think is really interesting is the importance of rebellion. That one just seems like it'll be fun to dig into, so... In the story, we see Harry and his friends rebelling against the rules in their quest to stop someone from stealing the Sorcerer's Stone. And as a result, they do a lot of sneaking around, like when Harry sneaks into the restricted section of the library. They do a lot of needling to get information out of Hagrid. Just a lot of mischief in their attempt to save the day. And so we have to ask the question, is it okay to rebel sometimes? It might seem counterintuitive to Christianity, like, you know, we're supposed to behave, right? But I think there's definitely a space for what John Lewis called good trouble. Sometimes we have to be good rebels.
Lumos.
Good rebels. So when it comes to the word rebellion, the Bible doesn't have much good to say. If you do a quick Google of Bible verses about rebellion, you're going to see tons about the wicked and sinners, and yeah, it's just not good. But there's one little verse that comes up in the search that caught my attention. In Acts chapter 5, Peter and the others have been brought before the council. They're in big trouble for continuing to teach about Jesus, and they're basically being told to stop or else. And verse 29 says... But Peter and the apostles answered, "We must obey God rather than men." And that right there, guys, is an act of good rebellion. That is good trouble. And we can see this kind of rebellion throughout history when good men and women stood up against evil laws and rulers. I'm immediately reminded of Martin Luther King Jr., a Christian leader who went to jail 29 times for acts of civil disobedience. And that's the key, isn't it? Like, good trouble isn't violent and gross. It's civil. It seeks peace even while breaking the rules. I mean, Jesus himself did a lot of this kind of rebellion, right? Now, he wasn't breaking any of God's laws, although he was constantly accused of doing so. But he broke the arbitrary regulations of the religious elite to the extent that they eventually killed him. So yeah, I think there is a space for rebellion among Christians, but it has to be motivated by the decision to follow God rather than follow people. I've done it, y'all. I've made the decision to rebel when what I was being told to do by people went against what I've been taught by Jesus, and it made my life pretty difficult for a minute, but it's worth it to stay on God's side. Galatians 1:10 says, "Obviously, I'm not trying to win the approval of people, but of God. If pleasing people were my goal, I would not be Christ's servant." Guys, if you're a true follower of Christ, then by definition, you're a rebel. Following Jesus means going against the grain. It means defying the expectations of the world. And it's so cool because our rebellion truly is good trouble. When people expect us to hate, let us rebel by showing love. When people expect us to fight, let us rebel by forgiving. When people expect us to be afraid, let us rebel by being courageous. When people expect us to judge, let us rebel by showing kindness. When people expect us to shrink back, let us rebel by being bold. This kind of rebellion is important. Indeed, it's the only way to shine the light of Jesus in this dark world.
Knox.
Finally, I want to take some time to explore a minor conflict in the story that we kind of gloss over but actually has a lot of implications in real life. When Harry was serving detention in the Forbidden Forest, we met a few centaurs who call the forest their home, and we got to witness a tiny bit of what appears to be an ongoing conflict between the centaurs Ferenz and Bane. Bane believes that centaurs should remain mostly separate from humans, and that the knowledge that centaurs gain from their study of the stars is none of the humans' business. Ferenz comes under fire from Bane when he steps in to save Harry from being attacked by the mysterious figure that we now know was Voldemort. When Ferenz lets slip some of the centaur's predictions about what's to come regarding Voldemort and Harry, Bane is furious, not to mention the fact that he thinks Ferenz letting Harry ride on his back is the most humiliating thing a centaur could do. In my English classes, we spend a lot of time studying the various types of conflict in literature, and this one can fit into the category of man versus society. We've got one character, Ferenz, taking a stance that puts him at odds with his society, the other centaurs. And this is an important type of conflict to study because it's something we will deal with as followers of Christ.
Lumos.
Christians versus society. I think we've discussed John 15, verses 18 and 19 before, in which Jesus says, "If the world hates you, know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you." Paul warns in 2 Timothy 3:12, "Indeed, all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted." Guys, this is the tough part of choosing to follow Christ, and it's definitely not one of the first things they teach you in Sunday school. I can see how for a new Christian or someone just looking into Christianity for the first time, these verses would be really off-putting, but I promise the risk is worth the reward. Like Ferenz, we run the risk of being in conflict with society when we make decisions based on what we know to be right rather than based on what everyone else is doing. A really simple example from my own life these days has to do with popular music and artists. I don't have a problem with secular music in general. Like, hello, guys, BTS is my absolute favorite. Hey, ARMY, any ARMY out there, give me a shout out over on Instagram. But over the past years, as I've learned about the stance that a lot of popular music artists are taking when it comes to faith, I've made the decision to stop listening to a lot of music that I used to really enjoy. When I learned that an artist has publicly aligned themselves with Satan, for example, then sorry, not sorry. I'm not going to listen to their music anymore. I don't want to expose myself to music and lyrics that may have been inspired by Satan, no matter how good the beat or how catchy the hook is. And that's just one minor, tiny way that a Christian can sort of be in conflict with society. Now, let me be clear. I do not go around hating on people who listen to those artists. Like, you know, you do you. I am not your judge. This is a choice that I've made for myself. But if someone asks me why I stop listening to them, then I'm prepared to tell them the truth. See, conflict doesn't always mean a fight. It just means a disagreement. And following Jesus means we should disagree with a lot of what's going on in our society today. And people aren't going to like it when we disagree. But again, our gospel is love. In 1 Corinthians 13, Paul explains that even if we're right, even if we're out there doing good things, we are nothing but noise if we don't operate first with love. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7 reminds us that love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. This is the beautiful paradox of the kingdom of God. We are countercultural because we follow him rather than following the crowd. And we are doubly countercultural because, if we're doing it right, we voice our disagreement with love rather than with anger.
Knox.
Well, guys, we are officially done with Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. I am really excited to get into Chamber of Secrets next, and I've already got some plans in the works for another special guest. So make sure you're following the show so you don't miss out. And again, I often pull content for the show from listener responses on Instagram, so make sure that you're following me there and keep an eye out for interactive stories so that you can be part of the magic here on The Gospel According to Harry Potter. Next time we meet, we will be setting off with Chapter 1 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets by J.K. Rowling. And until then, stay close to Jesus and don't let the muggles get you down. Bye!